Moncrief on News Talk.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is time for parenting once again. And we are joined, as usual, by Joanna Fortune, I should say. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Homeschooling is uppermost in everybody's mind, and they're not really looking forward to it. Funny enough, we did get a question in about this, so I kind of want to start off with that. Now, it probably is applies differently to different ages, but this person says, I'm doing some homeschooling with my daughter who's just turned 5. I don't know whether I should be concerned or not. We're doing some worksheets on letters from the school, and you use Play-Doh to make out the shape of the letter, then trace it on the page. We start off by saying what the letter is, words that begin with, make the sound, repeating it all the time, what the letter is called, etc. After 10 seconds, I'll ask her what the letter is, and she'll blank. We can make the letter A in Play-Doh, trace it out, talk about A for apple, and if I point at the letter and ask her what it is, she won't know. We can do this up to 10 times. Sometimes she gets upset, and I don't want doesn't want to do that and take a break, so we go back to it. I sometimes shake it up when we get one of her books for her to spot the letter we're learning. For everyone she gets a popcorn. She can do that, but can't remember what the letter is actually called. At the end of the day, she still can't remember or recall the letter if I point to it and can't draw it on a page. Is it too much to expect at this stage?
I just want to start by saying hats off to this parent. That is like tremendous homeschooling effort. There's so much going on here. And, you know, I mean, really look, what the first thing I'm going to say to you and the bottom line here, and it applies to all questions about homeschooling and how people are going to manage it now, is as best you can remove the stress, because that just, especially when I'm reading this, you know, you're really coming at this in a really structured way, but the demand is there. What's the letter? Do you remember the letter? You must know the letter. What's the letter? And if you put that heightened stress on it, you know, she's going to experience a kind of performance anxiety, which will then turn into resistance or avoidance. I don't want to do the letters at all, because the minute you mentioned we're going to do letters, all I can think about is how I won't know it and you'll be disappointed or frustrated with me. So try to remove the stress about it. The teaching system you're following is fairly solid, but always remember that children learn best, you know, by play. They learn best by doing rather than just saying. And also they need repetition. So using song and repeating, that's the best thing to do at this age. So there's tons of stuff out there that you can obviously make up a song about the alphabet yourself, or find words that are interesting. Her name, her doll's name, her teddy's name, her sibling's name, words that she would use every day, words that she likes, things that she likes, and start with those words, breaking down the letters in them. You know, and I think if you could also get something like a set of alphabet blocks, you may well have them lying around at home. Or do you know those fridge magnets that you can get that are all the letters? And simply play with them as if they were, you know, little Doll's House characters. Just play and say, oh, hey, B, my name is A. What are you up to? Have you seen D anywhere? And just play with it so that you're doing the letters, but not in that kind of drilling way of, what's the letter? Do you remember the letter? Why don't you? Because that's the stress bit. I mean, at her age, when you're saying, look, are you expecting too much? I just don't think there's a one size fits all with this. That, you know, at 5 years old, many children can sound like they're reading when actually they're pretending to. Either they're interpreting the pictures, which is fine and lovely, but they're telling you a story rather than reading it. They very much enjoy being read to. Again, through repetition, you know, kids, especially at this age, they latch onto a book and they want you to read it over and over, and then they sit there and they read it to you and you go, oh my God, I have a genius on my hands. But actually they've memorized it and they're just, you know, parroting it back to you. So, you know, some children know their letters and can write them out and recall and recognize at 5. And you know what? Some can't. And that's not indicative necessarily of a problem. So I would say that when she's an adult, you know what, even 5 years from now, whether she learned her letters or knew how to recognize them at 5 years old or 7 or 8 years old, won't matter a bit. But if you are worried, like if you're listening and going, no, look, I think there's more to this, why don't you reach out to her teacher and say, have you noticed her struggling with this in school? Here's what I'm doing. How do you teach it in the classroom? Maybe my method is different to yours and I could mirror what you do. So she's getting it in a very consistent way. But the other thing is with homeschooling, Shauna, we're all facing this at the moment, is we're not teachers, okay? Yeah. So we're not expected, or we shouldn't expect of ourselves, to deliver a professional teaching curriculum. Teachers are experts at teaching and education. You know, that's what they're trained to do. It's what they do all day, and they're excellent at it. What we're trying to do is enough. This truly is one of those where that phrase, good enough is good enough, is there. And to just challenge ourselves to think a little bit beyond traditional education and learning, that learning is multi-layered for children. It's not just about sitting and writing or learning sums or doing schoolwork. I'm not saying that's not important. It is, and we should definitely be making an effort at that with our kids, if only to send a message to them that it does matter. But learning happens when they're playing. Learning happens when they're acquiring new life skills. This is my way of telling you that this is the time to teach them, you know, how to empty the dishwasher, sweep the floor properly, and you know, open the famous tin of beans that we've heard so much about online recently. But there's lots of ways of doing learning. So I would say the best thing to do is, when you're getting this tension from your child and they're getting to that kind of anxious, resistant phase, or even if they're reluctant to get going, or, you know, you're reluctant to get going in the morning, start with the thing they enjoy. Start with something fun, start with something creative, maybe an art project. And then they're up and engaged. Then come in with the more challenging piece, and maybe use a timer, like one of those 15-minute, 20-minute sand timers that you can get, and then do something fun after it again, so that you break it up, but you don't allow tension or anxiety and stress to build about it, because then you're putting a high emotional charge on learning, and it's just going to make them integrating the information much more challenging for them.
Also, this little girl is what, five?
It
just strikes me that maybe, you know, mommy's anxious that, you know, that the little girl, you know, will, you know, become illiterate or something. And at five, how much should they be taught anyway? I mean, it's probably all the other kids are not learning their letters at the same rate, so to speak. So it's not like she's going to be left behind or anything.
I would totally agree with you. I mean, typically, many children take until they're seven. Most children, even in school, you know, actually reading independently is something by 7 years old. But at 5 years old, it's about becoming familiar with the letters, typically using phonics and sounds. Not unlike what this parent is doing. I would just say, you know, the amount of it you're doing and the expectation you're saying after 10 seconds, I would just keep it a little more relaxed than that. Make it about fun with letters, because then you keep her interested in learning. And it's her interest that will actually ultimately lead to her acquiring the skill.
Yeah. Also, though, as well, I mean, that's a 5 year old, and you're covering, you know, you're covering stuff, you know, yourself. When you've got a, you know, junior cert algebra and it's just gobbledygook, that's a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I don't even think you have to jump as far ahead as junior cert. Yeah. I think there are parents who are going to be sitting down with fifth and sixth class and going, oh, my goodness, did I ever know how to do this? And I think it's OK to kind of start from a place of not knowing and seeking to understand. I always think if we as parents can start with being curious and not set ourselves up to fail by, you know, I know it all. Nobody knows it all. It is OK to say to them, my gosh, I haven't done this since I was your age. That's quite a while ago. Do you know what we'll do? You're going to do something else, and I'm going to sit with your textbook and read through it myself and get familiar with it before we sit down and do it together. And you're letting them know that actually we're going to learn about this together, and you don't have to know everything and get it right all the time. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And also recognizing our limitations, that there might be some subjects that we feel particularly proficient in, and always pay attention if those are the ones you're trying to really emphasize to your kids, and go, we'll keep doing the geography that I feel particularly competent in, and actually make it about what they enjoy doing as well. Just give it a go, though, and remember, learning is fluid. Learning is much broader than sitting down with just school books.
Right. Next question is about a child who's a bit older. I have a girl in leaving cert who at home is an outspoken, argumentative and sometimes very irritating teenage girl. She also spends long hours in her room watching Netflix and on social media. pretty normal teenager, you might say. In her class in school, she was good friends with the main group of girls, except in the past 2 years when they drifted apart. She wouldn't always have been invited to activity. She was fine with that and she was busy with all her own activities. At a parent-teacher meeting, I mentioned she wasn't as happy as she used to be. Teacher said she was quite immature in class, not as knuckled down as the others, and didn't say much, very different from how she is at home. Unfortunately, teacher was quite tough on her after that. So not so much help. During December, the girls in her class held a party. My daughter didn't want to go and used the corona fear as an excuse that her parents didn't allow her to go. She dreaded the girls would talk about her behind her back. Little did I realise how horrible these girls can be. They had a game or a vote on who would be the most famous and such like. There were a number of really negative questions, e.g., who is more likely to be a drug addict, who would never get a partner. My daughter got votes on all the negative questions. Of course, my daughter found out. She talked about it to one of the girls in the group, who said it was only a bit of fun. I'm so upset. How can you hear things like this at this vulnerable age? I'm afraid she's scarred for life. What can I do to help?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, there's a few things in here. I'm not going to go down the route of why were the girls doing it necessarily, but that question, what can I do to help, is really loud, I think, in this. And particularly when you say how upset you are, you know, I'm so upset, you know, she's going to be scarred for life. What can I do? So there's a couple of things straight away that I think you can do. And I'm going to start by what you're not to do. Okay. Avoid a fix or change agenda. And I fully recognize how easy that is for me to say and how absolutely challenging and difficult it is as a parent when you're watching your child struggle and experience something like this, and you just want to jump in there and rescue them from the hurt and the pain and the, you know, the disappointment of it all. But do not jump into problem solving mode, because if you do, you're going to deny her the opportunity to express and explore her own emotional experience of what's happening and her own understanding or the meaning she's making, you know, from her own point of view of what's going on. Because what's important here is not how you are feeling about it, or certainly not just how you're feeling about it, but how is she feeling about it? What sense does she make when her friend or one of the friends in this group said it was just a bit of fun? How did that resonate with her? And how is she feeling about it now a few days on? So what I'm basically saying is sit with her and talk to her, reflect with empathy. But this is where you're going to practice active listening and really use that wondering thing that I've mentioned before. I'm wondering, what was that like for you? Because actually you were anticipating that you might be spoken about if you didn't go, and it turns out you were right. So you really understand this group very well. What was it like when you found out you were right? And I'm wondering, and bring her deeper into that so that you're practicing emotional fluency about even negative experiences, because that's actually something that's going to be helpful for her in the long run. I think what you could do if she is really struggling with it and, you know, very disappointed and upset, is invite her to write out what she would like to say to these girls, you know, about what's happened, to write it all out and then to read it aloud. You'll sit in a chair and she can pretend that you are one or a group of the girls in question, and she can read aloud what she would like to say, and just then reflect again on what was that like. What would it be like to really do it? But what was it like to get to say those words out loud? I think that could be really helpful. The other thing that jumps out at me, though, Sean, and this is a bit earlier in the letter, you know, about the teacher piece, and, you know, that she's very different in school than she is at home. Again, that's not, you know, a shocker, because actually home is her safe environment. Home is where she can emotionally exhale, where she's safe and secure, and she can actually express herself in her authentic way. And it sounds like school might actually be quite stressful for her. And so she's adapting and adopting another persona or way of being just to get through it and cope. What just jars with me, though, is that after your parent-teacher meeting, you say the teacher became quite tough on her, or certainly either you know that or your daughter perceives it that way. I just, on that point, you know, if there are teachers listening as well, just be really mindful that when you're a teacher and there's a room full of peers, when you are overtly tough on one child, inadvertently you can cue the rest of the group that it's okay to be tough on this kid, that actually it's okay to target this kid. And if you've a group of girls who are already predisposed to singling others out, and again, I don't want to demonize one group of teenagers, because, you know, developmentally a lot of change goes on in peer group, but if they've been, you know, inadvertently given permission to be tough on her or pick on her, I think it would be worth talking to the teacher about, actually, while you understand that being tough on her was that way of getting her to quote unquote knuckle down, it actually hasn't worked and your daughter isn't doing well with being singled out. And could there be another way that's maybe kinder, softer, and, you know, at a different level of working with her on that? So I would talk to the teacher, and I would absolutely sit with her, show an interest in other friends, because it also, you know, struck me that she has been busy. I don't know about right now with, you know, all the restrictions, but has been busy with all of her own activities. Does she have friends that are outside of her typical peer group in school, you know, friends to do with these activities? Show an interest in those, and, you know, really encourage her to nurture those relationships as well. Just don't rescue her from this, but sit with her and bear witness and help her to work through the disappointment, frustration, and the challenging feelings that it's bringing up.
Yeah, indeed. Of course, a lot of that is moot at the moment, given that everything's locked down. We'll see how severe that's going to be in the not too distant future. A few comments, particularly on the homeschooling. And the first question of the five-year-old who isn't quite getting her letters yet: tell that mam to give herself a break. I'm a national school teacher. She'll learn when she's ready. Mm-hmm. Chill and don't be so hard on yourself. They are still only babies when they're five. Shay says, I'm really struggling with Irish with my fourth class daughter. I honestly have no idea what's going on. I tend to just encourage her rather than offer any corrections or suggestions. She seems to be happy enough, but we're both flying a bit blind here, says Shay, which I suppose, as you said, Joanna, is the best you can do at this stage of the game.
Absolutely. And just giving it a go and seeing what other resources. There's some lovely Irish children's books and jigsaws out there, you know, as well, that would be well worth getting, because it's a nice way of covering the language. But yeah, if you recognize your limitations there, focus on what you can do and just flag it to the teacher going back that there may well be a gap in that subject.
Right, we have to take a break. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. After this, an 8-year-old who likes to suck his toes. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us. Joanna was already dealing with a question about a Leaving Cert student who's having a hard time with her peers, plus the problems of homeschooling a five-year-old who doesn't seem to be paying that much attention. Now, next question is this. My 8-year-old son is very flexible and does gymnastics. He's a great little kid, however. He has a habit I can't stomach. He sits watching television with his foot in his mouth and sucks away at his toes. To me, the position looks uncomfortable, but he says he's relaxed and says he doesn't even know he's doing it anymore. I've asked him to stop sucking one's toes. Isn't exactly normal behaviour, but my husband says to leave it be. He's hurting no one. I feel sick every time I see him do it. Should I discourage it? I'm conflicted, mainly because of my husband's input.
Oh, now I'm going to do what I never do. I'm going to side with the husband here. I know this is terrible. And it's not that I never side with husbands. I don't like siding with anyone. But actually, what jumps out here is you can't stomach it. You feel sick. Yeah. You're the one who has the problem here. So the only one who can change in this situation is you. I would be saying, look, he's not hurting himself. Like, we've often talked about habits or little things that children do that, you know, they could be actually picking at their skin or biting their nails too low or doing something that actually could be harmful to themselves. He's not. So I would say, you know, he's not hurting himself. Try not to draw any attention to it. Excuse me. Because actually, if you keep heightening his attention to it, all you're doing is reinforcing the behavior. So we all have quirks and habits that tend to offer us comfort. I'm always a fan that when children have found something that helps them to relax, that they know works for them, just commend them on knowing how to make themselves feel good. I would say the best thing you can do is change your seating location in the sitting room so that he's not in your eye line, and try to stop looking over at him. You know, focus somewhere else. But if you're listening and saying, no way, Joanna, absolutely not, I can't do this, what you could do is when you see him doing it, instead of getting into that's not normal or that's disgusting or don't do it, say to him, you know, let me rub your foot. Give him a little foot rub. It's really relaxing if somebody rubs your feet. Let me try that and see, does that help you relax? And do something with his feet for him. Or you could suggest the two of you snuggle together under a blanket, i.e. your feet will be under the blanket and not in your mouth when you do that. So you could come at it in a kind of, you know, very nurture-based, solution-focused way. But honestly, would try to leave it alone. If he's not hurting himself, what he's doing is offending you. And that might be just something that you're going to have to deal with. It could be worse. It actually could be worse.
Absolutely, it could. But it's an extraordinary skill. I mean, that's kind of slightly amazing.
Know. I know. I have to say, like, the child is clearly like a little pretzel that he can bend that way and still find it relaxing. So it might be a time limited thing as well. I don't know how long he'll be able to do that for. But again, I just think, you know, he's literally telling you it's relaxing. I feel relaxed. Take that as a win. I think that's great.
Some people listening differing opinions on this themselves. I'm sorry, that is rotten, salty, sticky, cheesy, feet in your mouth, vile. But he's eight.
He's eight. And, you know, worst case scenario, do a little foot spa, a little pedicure if you're like, it's not that he's sucking his toes, it's where his toes were first. Certainly deal with that if it's a hygiene issue. But that wasn't flagged here. It's more that it's a toe thing.
Yeah, it's good for his immune system. My 7-year-old heard my sister on FaceTime video to me talking about the new version of herself she's going to be this year. She talked extensively about her weight, giving up alcohol, sweets, etc. She also talked about a lot about carbs. I didn't realize my daughter was listening to the whole thing, and now she's going on about the new her. The main issue I have is that she's reducing her eating. I've told her she has a very healthy diet and there's no need to change a thing, but she's adamant she won't eat carbs, even though she doesn't know what they are. She only knows they mean chips, potatoes and pizza and no more sweets. Granted, we're only 5 days into this problem, so it won't last. But she's been very strict on herself. I put potatoes on her plate, even her favourite garlic ones, and she won't touch them. How can I get her to relax a little about this? She is a determined girl when it comes to Lent, and that she is so great at sticking to it. I'm worried she's starting something here that will spiral.
Yeah, because 5 days for me shows good stamina, actually, yeah. You know, especially for a 7-year-old, but for anyone. I just think this is such a good example of how little ears are always listening and little eyes are always watching us. That when it comes to any behavior, really, but particularly stuff about food, about body-based and image-based stuff, children take their cues and lead from the grown-ups around them. And that's what you're dealing with here. I mean, look, you could talk about how ridiculous the whole new year, new me kind of mantra is. But at the same time, especially putting that kind of charge around the body, at the same time, you are where you are and she's picked up on this. I just be really aware of yourself, how you speak about it. So you don't want to dismiss this and say, you know, your auntie was silly or don't mind her, because at the same time, her auntie has said this and she obviously respects her and, you know, looks up to her. And so you have to be balanced about that as well, because if you dismiss one set of words and actions, you're undermining a whole lot as well. But what you could do is sit with her and name what's happened. Just name it and say, I've been watching how you keep using the word carbs and how you don't want to eat them and you've cut back your food. And I think you heard a grown-up conversation between me and whoever auntie is, and you're actually following what she was saying. So I'm going to step in, because you missed the bit about healthy carbs and healthy food and how we have to make sure that we're eating enough. And we in our family, you and I, whatever it is, we already eat well, so no changes are needed. So I'm going to step in as the grown-up in charge, is basically what you're saying. And say that that doesn't apply to you. We're not going to do that in this house. We eat a little of everything and we already eat healthy and we're just going to stay that way. I'd also, you know, if she is interested in food and at the moment interested in a way that's just alarming you, make sure if you're not already that you do involve her in food prep and that she sees what goes into food and dinners and she's aware of, you know, healthy eating if that's an interest to her. But at the same time, at 7 years old, I don't want any emotional charge around food or body. I want children eating what they want to eat, and you know, treats should be in there for children as well. They shouldn't even be thinking about stuff like this. But the fact that she is, I think, deal with it head on, name it, tell her what she heard was a grown-up conversation and doesn't apply to her, and you're stepping in and you're going to help her to stay healthy, but that you already are there.
My 6.5-year-old daughter is very attached to her soother. When at home, she almost continually has it in her mouth, so much so that I have difficulty understanding her when she speaks. She gets very upset if she ever misplaces it, including at night, if it falls on the ground and she can't find it. It is having an impact on her teeth now, and I am concerned that this physical aspect will affect her in later years. I know it's an emotional comfort to her, and I do not want to just take it from her. Whenever we speak about it, she doesn't know why she needs it so much. I'd love that we could come up with a plan together to begin to use it less, but I don't think she's ready. My daughter's mum has not lived with us for the last 4 years due to mental illness, which no doubt is a contributory factor. Her mum has struggled with her mental health since the birth of our daughter. Please help, says a concerned dad.
Oh, you know, you guys have dealt with a lot, you know, over the last number of years, really since your daughter was born. And I just think take a moment to acknowledge this and also, you know, how well the two of you are doing, but also how smart your little girl is, that she could find a way in a very difficult family time. She could find a way of self-soothing that works for her. And it was her dodie or her soother, you know. So just take a moment to say that these have not been easy years for you guys, and you've done really, really well, and this has been her way of helping herself to feel better in that difficult time. And I that there's a lot of smartness in that. And I think if you reflect that back to her as well, that, you know, when she says, I don't know why I need it so much, that you could say, do you know, I think I know why you did need it and it really helped you. But now we have to look at it in a different way, because we have to think about, you know, I want to make sure that I can hear you with your clear words and that you have a lovely, healthy smile, you know, that you talk about it in positive language, that this isn't about her doing anything wrong. Sometimes, you know, when it comes to the soother thing, particularly at this age, because she is quite old for it, and, you know, dental wise and all of that, it's definitely advised she give it up. But a visit to a kind and prepped in advance, given the situation here, a dentist could be helpful, where the dentist very kindly says, oh, do you know, we have to let that go because we have to mind your teeth. And just hearing it from somebody else sometimes can be helpful. But apart from that, I would say bring in a little magic here. Fill a box or a little baggie, whatever you have, with soothers or whatever ones around the house, and always think about where she might be storing them, you know, so it's never just one soother. Fill it up with them and have the soother fairy, the dodie fairy, whatever you call it, is going to take them away, but leave a little gift box. It doesn't have to be big now, just a little box or bag that has different sensory items in it that could get a different way of basically self-soothing and finding comfort. So it might have something like a smooth stone or a little shell. It could have a small fluffy teddy, something very nice to feel. It could have a square little piece of silky material, velvet material, a couple of things in the bag that she can try out rubbing, feeling, holding, and seeing is that going to be something nice to do instead. But it would be a gift from the fairy who has taken away the soothers but left her another way. And offer yourself that while it is difficult for her to give up the soothers, offer yourself as a source of comfort for her while she works through that and get through it. I also think if the dodie fairy could include in that bag something like a little pack of seeds that she could plant, and you can help her do that, and she can watch the seeds that she's planted grow and develop and take care of it. And it's a little reminder of, I've given up my soother, but look at what I have here instead. And it can be a nice little visual sensory piece as well. In the meantime, if you wanted to do the bring in the magic, sure, but if in it, sort of leading up to that, so it's not a cold turkey thing, if you want to just gradually wind down how much time she's using the soother, put a time limit on when she can use it, maybe restrict it to just evening times or just particular times, and for how long. She can have it till she falls asleep and then you'll take it away. You could do something like that just to kind of wean her off it before it fully disappears.
But I imagine, though, because, you know, kids that age will agree to anything, you know, immediately. But then the next day, she's looking for the dodie when she's upset. That's going to be the kind of hard line in the sand kind of part of it.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, exactly why I think the dodie fairy, because often the dodie fairies, you know, they bring a little toy or something like that. But I'd like this dodie fairy to bring a little sensory bag different things that she can try out that are also going to be sensory seeking, that are going to give her that soothing experience, and that dad put himself there and say, I'm going to be the comfort. So if you need a cuddle or if you need some extra kisses or hugs while you get through this, that's what I'm here for. Because she's definitely going to need something, a transitional object after this. And also just to acknowledge the function that it has served for her, that it has been a source of comfort, you know, when comfort was really needed. So I think that's something just to acknowledge and say to her, we'll find another way of doing it.
Joanna, thanks a million as ever, and we'll talk to you next week. Joanna Fortune there on our parenting slot. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief on News Talk.